Good evening. All right. Oh, whoa.
Wow.
That's impressive. Okay, this is a special meeting of Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District on August 15th, 2018. It is 6 p.m., actually 6:03, and we'll call the meeting to order with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Roll call. Robert Swan present. John Armstrong.
Here.
Spencer Edwards.
Here.
Janet Kwiatkowski is not here. She is in the Bay Area somewhere attending to her new granddaughter. Nancy Mora.
Present in
here. So we have four directors present. That is a quorum. I'm going to make a remark or two here just about what we're doing. This is a board meeting, so that we're going through this formality. What we intend to do is, what this is a hearing as mandated by Section 13D of the California Constitution to review and take protests for the proposed rate increase. So we'll be having a short presentation from our general manager, Mr. Campa, just reviewing the proposed increase and the need for it. Presumably, you all received mailings of the pamphlet that we sent out to describe these things, so it shouldn't be any great surprises. We'll then have board comments and see if we need anything to just from the board, see if there's anything we want to discuss. And then we'll have the public hearing, and at which point anybody that wants to express their opinions about this or make comments is welcome to do so. We have a actual podium and a PA system that's working for a change, so people can stand up at the podium. Reiterate, this is a Brown Act meeting, and therefore you do not have to identify yourself. You can if you want to, but it is not required. And once the comments are closed, we'll close the hearing, and we will count the ballots or the protests, I believe, has to happen. And then, assuming that we have not had a 50% plus one level of protests, we will then consider the adoption of resolution. Sorry. We have quite a few of them this month. 22-18, which will implement the proposed changes. And during the presentation, when people are making comments, just for general purposes, try to keep it under maybe 3 minutes. If we don't have people here, so we may be able to go about more than once if necessary. We'd like to keep things moving along. So that said, we're still having a little feedback on this. We will have a staff presentation, just outlining key points.
No cookie.
You know, I don't think you really need the mic.
No, I'm not going to need it. No.
I don't think I really need it.
My name is Pete Campa. I recognize some faces from the town hall meeting we had in the last month. I'm the district general manager. So I'm responsible for the day-to-day activities of the district. I'm responsible for pulling together the professional consultants, professional expertise, to make sure that the system is understood, the system is operating in compliance with all requirements. Feed that information to the board of directors who makes these decisions here. So throughout this recent election cycle. The board members were all up for election and were all reappointed in lieu of election. Basically, just five of them that signed up and just five appointments. So the board will continue in the future, and I found this really awesome to work with. So we're formed by a voting board of people for specific purposes, water, sewer, fire, parking, park facilities. We're governed by state regulations. So when you say, well, who governs you guys? Well, it's the state regulations, the state constitution. Grand jury gets involved when there's been complaints or concerns. And then the courts interpret things too, of course. But we're lucky enough to not have a lot of trouble in that regard. And again, it's an elected board of directors, and they serve on a four-year term. The organization, we have 16 full-time equivalents that are approved. I'll show you in a little bit how it relates to the sewer rates. But when you look at, you've got the community members and board of directors, general manager, auditor, attorney, and engineer that help maintain continuity in records and information and financial data when there are changes in board members and management. That's professional staff is consulting. And then you've got office staff, and you've got operations staff on the right. And you've got pretty much 12 employees plus Gantry, the operations manager, on the operations side. In reality, this headcount, the number of employees that about 25% since 2010. There's an engineering division in there back then, and that was run by these folks and by professional consultants. We're funded, well, just focus on the sewer, base charges and fees. Okay, there's not a special pot of money that comes to us from the state, from the county, in the city. We do receive grant funds, but those just come in specific for projects. They don't offset operations. It's just there for projects, building something to solve a problem. And then the state constitution, state laws also prohibit us from charging sewer rates, in other words, increasing sewer rates and then subsidizing water customers, or using water money to subsidize sewer. That's not allowed under the law. Very careful. Something that's always asked is about why is our sewer service so expensive? Why are we more than TV? Why are we more than Vanessa? Why are we more than Sunnyvale? I don't get it. I don't understand. Well, every district, every public agency that provides sewer has to meet the same requirements. It doesn't matter if you've got 700 employees in the city of Sunnyvale and you've got all sorts of people to help you. You meet the same water quality requirements as we do here. A drop of sewage in the waterway there costs you the same as a drop of sewage in the waterway here. So then there's no regardless of sewage circumstances. So that is kind of our Bible or our guidebook that we have to go by. The environmental regulations and the permitting regulations. We have permits from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, that is the State Water Board of the state of California, and they review our operation for the wastewater collection and the treatment plant, and they make sure that we have full compliance with that all the way through. And Greg is our chief plant operator in the battery. He's in contact with them every other day, at least several times a week, just because they demand a lot of attention. We are dealing with public health and safety, so we can't just turn our back on it and say, oh, well, I'm not going to worry about whether that's going to spill or not, or whether it's going to get into the lake or whether it's going to get into a water source. It's public health and safety. The last couple bullets are, if you have a highly mechanical system, unfortunately, they built a system where the majority of the connections are below the sewer treatment plant. So everything has to move uphill to the plant, which is opposite of what you would normally build. So everything has to be pumped. It has to be pumped over hills. It has to be pumped out miles of main and other infrastructure. We have one lift station, and I'll show you a picture of that. It's two pumps down in the hole to pump the sewage out, have a backup generator, pipes, valves, controls, technology, all of that. One of those for every 100 customers in Groveland. Okay, so 100 people pay that bill. It's $1 million, 100 people are paying that bill. In Modesto, one lift station for every 2,677 customers. For that same lift station, they got 2,677 people that pay for it. You might operate more, you might have more power, but you've got a lot more. I can't even tell you the whole part. So that's the one thing that's hard to explain. You know, when you're in a bigger area, that infrastructure, it's like a, you know, the cost of moving people by an aircraft versus individual single planes and what that cost would be. So we put together a graphic that kind of helps understand where today's dollars and the dollar that goes into GCSE is spent based on our budget, it's spent in this way. And we've got an amount budgeted for infrastructure reserve, for debt service, that we pay loan payments, capital improvement projects. And you'll see that the budget that was approved by the board, the asterisk is that if the rates are not approved, then those two components have to come off, the capital improvement projects and the infrastructure reserve, to be able to balance the budget. We've got salary and benefits at a low percentage. We have a bunch of employees, and that is the time that they have dedicated to the sewer system, because those same employees will operate a water plant too, or operate a water distribution system, but they track their time on the sewer. We've got a whole chunk of it that's other operating expenses. It's everything else, from power to fuel to permits, engineering, all of our day-to-day stuff, chemicals, all of that makes up about half of the cost. So in this case, salary and benefits are fairly low, and the operating cost is the higher part. So the main reason that we need rate increases is because we don't have enough money. Looking forward, we don't have enough money to make the improvements, which means we got to sit back and let the system fail and then fix it. Let the system fail and then fix it. Meanwhile, when it fails, it spills. When it spills, we get fined. And we get all the public stuff that goes on with that. Or we don't need a treatment standard. Great comes unglued because the state's down his neck that we didn't need a treatment standard. And then we get a fine and mandatory minimum penalty from the state for not meeting that standard because some piece of equipment broke down. Something wasn't working right. We couldn't predict that it was going to break down if we didn't have the money to fix it proactively. Last rate increase was 2010. We'll talk more about that. That's been a significant problem with what we're dealing with today. It's just basically we built up a little bit of a reserve, and basically cut expenses back, and then we ate up that reserve, and we're pretty much at nothing on what we've got left. And so going forward, it's not a good thing when you're looking at 8 years of no rate increases. And I've talked a lot about other stuff. We've got these system improvements aren't just putting money in the infrastructure, they're putting money into cost savings along with it. Because I'll show you some of the equipment that we're dealing with that we can save a lot of money. And we're also setting aside, proposing to set aside funding for future replacement of infrastructure that we're using now. It's kind of hard to think about. You've got a 12-inch main that your sewage is going through, and it's going to cost $8 million to replace in 2050. Well, you've used it all these years. You may not be there in 2050 when it's replaced, but somebody's got to be contributing to it all along the way, or in 2050, it's going to cost through the nose. So one question that came up at the town hall meeting last night was, why 17% is so much? What are you guys doing? Well, you know, 17% is a lot. It really shouldn't be a much lower amount per year. However, we need a 51% increase to be able to do the things that we know we have to do. And so it's spread out over 3 years. And cycle or just the cost of living at that point so that we don't get behind the curve. And 6% is kind of the target number in the industry as an annual increase because our cost, because the regulatory driven go up faster than the cost of living. And so 6% on the rates every year would have put us $890,000 in the bank since 2010, and we would only be doing a 6% increase today. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not blaming anything on the tax. It's just a matter of when we talk about rates every year, it's painful to do this stuff, but if we don't, somebody's going to make that. We also reduced costs. You probably saw this in your information that was mailed out, but we reduced costs at 2010 as well, and that's primarily by cutting the staff back. We're definitely at a minimum. So the money is proposed to be spent in addition to funding the basic operation, that 48 cents that developed power fuel and all that, that is estimated going forward. But the need for this money, where it's going to be allocated, is $100,000 a year in reserve set aside. That's paying for that pipeline, that 12-inch pipeline replacement in 2050. $300,000 a year for replacement of our existing site. I'll show you the list of what we're dealing with just this year. Pumps, valves, parts, vehicles, equipment, processes, those kind of things. And then ultimately $61,000 debt service, because we're eligible for a grant of up to $6 million to do significant improvements to the sewer system in Bigelow, Black, Groveland, and Pine Mountain Lake. And that $6 million in grants is huge because otherwise, if we have to fund it out of your pockets or take on another debt or a bond or something like that, the rate increases would be huge. So in order to be able to qualify for that loan, we have to have the cash flow, and we have to take on a 25% loan. The state would pay 75%, and it's based on the population, based on the income of our population. So that reflects a loan for $1.375 million debt service over 20 years at 2.5% interest, which is the state, it's a subsidized rate. And then the steel paper master plan. Because the number of 100,000 and 300,000, you see those are rounded numbers, really, really rounded. That's because the last master plan was also done back in, I think, 2001 or something like that. That's only 20 years ago. And the master plan is what was the condition of your infrastructure, what regulations have changed, what processes have changed, what new technology is, and what you need to do. Gives you a 1, 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 year spending money. And that's what we're going to put together. We'll get an engineering consultant to dial that in. So next time we talk about where that money's going, we'll see it tied to your certain budget. So this is what I won't be late with these either, Bill, all day long in the office. If the rates go through, that increase of about, I think it's around $11, $12 on average, is spent on capital improvement projects, that $300,000 infrastructure reserve, $100,000, and then a portion of the operating expenses, because the operating expenses increase every year as well. When we get out to 2023, the last of the rate increases in this 5-year cycle, by that time we've taken on $3.82 a month worth of loan. The capital improvement projects have matured out to $17.24, the infrastructure matured $5.75, operating expenses about $12, and then the contingency reserve. The reason there's a contingency reserve there is because we're finally at a point 3 years down the road that revenue exceeds expenses. And so anything where by that year, we're estimated out that have $120,000 to deposit. Even though we're spending $300,000 a year on equipment and infrastructure and $100,000 in reserve, we're expected to have a positive cash flow by that time. 17-17-15 instead of all of it in place at the same time, we made it for the first few years. That was a lot different. Anyway, that's the issue. That's what it looks like now. You crawl down into it, you reach down, everything's in your way to try to get underneath it. Everything's a rust bucket and mess and difficult to work on, easy to fail. The improved ones have a coating on the inside and they pull the pump up to the top, service it from the top, you know, find space issues and much more efficient in all aspects. This is Greg's favorite piece of equipment. This is where I would use a little laser pointer to point all the good stuff on that drum on the left. That's where when the wastewater comes into the plant, it separates out the G.I. Joes and all the other solids, puts it on the belt, sends it around the belt, brings it in that conveyor, drops it into that, and makes a little muffin out of it, and then we dispose of it. But that mechanical process can take a person all day long working on it, just because it's a lot of cleaning, it's out of balance, there's a lot of mechanical work associated with it, and that will be updated in the March of the slick drying capacity, these slick beds that you've seen, if you've seen those little tilt roof buildings that we have there outside the wastewater plant, they never really work the way they were intended to work. Supposed to be able to move your sludge out there, which is the end result of the treatment process, dry it to a really dry substance that's lighter weight, have it fall off, and or reused in some type of bioproduct. And it never really worked because too much shade, not enough sun, and all of that. So we actually dry it out on the asphalt. A $90,000 expense is to make modifications to this and pour concrete slab that the building can go on and make it more functional. Because the faster we get it out of there, the less expensive it is to operate. Just saves us money all the way around. This is what we're spending money on this year. The very top project, I'm just going to hit the big numbers, $155,000, that's a planning grant, money in, money out, 100% paid for by the state. That is a planning, the last of our $500,000 planning project that will give us the $6 million plan. The engineers' drawings and everything for the $6 million sewer improvement project. So let's go ahead and talk about that. That project will start in the next few weeks. A lot of jackhammers and other stuff. A few other pump replacements and upgrades at the plant. The big numbers at the bottom are all related to the black flood of March 22nd. We have a section of sewer, several sections of sewer in Pine Mountain Lake that were completely inundated, and so much so that the trench liquefied because it's in rock. So that sand and dirt in that trench liquefied and the pipe was full of water, and when everything settled out in between each of the manholes, the pipe fell in. So we can't use it. So it clogged up, solids filled up in it. So we have to replace that right away within the next year. The other stuff that doesn't mean a whole lot, the 200,000 is a lot of work, dirt work at the treatment plant. The flume, which takes all the drainage off the hillside plant, the treatment plant, and takes it around the plant and sends it down the creek, was damaged in 2017. And then FEMA got us the money in April of 2018. But we couldn't do the work because it was damaged on March 22nd, 2018. So now we got a bigger project. So we got $1.8 million worth of projects that we're doing, and more than $300,000 of that is going to be paid for by the rates. So we're going to be drawing that reserve down a little further than we thought that has to be done. So, again, to not dwell on the numbers, we've got this information in the resolution, we received this in your mail. But this shows the residential rates current and then increasing by 17% in 18-19, effective September 1st, 19-20, 21, and then 21-22, that's where the revenue and expenses have equalized, and we're funding those reserves and the equipment, and then we just increase it by the estimated cost of living at that time. So that we don't lose any ground. It gives us a chance to evaluate whether additional increases are necessary, whether we're on the right track, whether we're too much, whatever it is. At that point, and again, when we get out to that point, 21-22, if the budget doesn't need a 3% increase, if there's not a 3% increase in expenses, we've got to think about whether we increase that. Understand, every time we know we see the adjusted budget, and 3% is just allocable. So the average residential bill, this just takes the combination of the flat monthly rate plus the percentage of your consumptive water, and adds those two together to give you the bill for both big old flat bill and kind of night. And that is one thing that is noticeable is in Pine Mountain Lake, the increase goes from 149 cents to 107.86. That's not the whole 17%, and the reason that it's not is because when we refinanced debt a couple years ago, the annual payments went down, and so we're able to drop the rate by $5 a month. But that affects just that bond payment for Pine Mountain Lake alone. So this number reflects that. Commercial rates, the same way. This is the way the commercial rates lay out over the same period. I mean, the rates are basically applied the same way in commercial and residential. And then that's the typical average commercial bill. And so the process is we mail out a notice 45 days in advance minimum. Get people engaged so that they get the information, understand what the rate increases about. And then you have a public hearing 45 days later. You take a protest and approve. This is the first time that we actually sent out a protest form. You know, it's becoming a practice because sometimes people wouldn't understand how do I protest this thing? Do I write it on a napkin? Sure, that works. Good. Put it on a business card. It's okay. You can get your address. So providing a form makes it fairly simple, which is the right thing. Then we have the public hearing, and that's what's going on tonight. And then if the rates are approved, they would be recommended to meet that way as well. So, not so short.
Okay. You do have a question. You can have.
I just wondered if you could expand a little bit on the debt service charge to P&L. Mm-hmm. Please, I think a lot of P&L is.
What is that? Sorry, here I am,
really
informal. Eating a cookie because I have an email today, so I'm sorry.
I would do the same.
Good. The debt was for a number of improvements in Pine Mountain Lake in the collection system. And when we did those improvements, issuing debt, bonded indebtedness is similar to just getting a loan, but you have a certain amount of bond payment that you pay each year. Was it 2014 that it was refinanced? Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
13 or 14.
Yeah.
The original the original bond was in 2007, and
okay, that's
and so that's so it expires in 2027. Were there two sewer bonds or why I get
no,
confused?
One sewer bond,
and it was refinanced in. Either late 2013 or early 2014. I was on the board when we did it, or when that happened, but I don't really remember which year it was. We don't have the option with any of the bonds of just going out and refinancing them. They were originally issued with a restriction that we can only do that if the current bondholder agrees to it. Okay. Well, as it happened in 2013, the current bondholder did say, hey, you know, we could refinance this because they get bond issuing charges and that sort of thing.
No.
And so it was refinanced, didn't change the end date. So the termination date is still 2027. And it reduced the necessary payments by about per account, about $5 a month. Now, at the time, this is what happened at the time, the way that the original rate was added to the bill, we were not required to reduce the payment. We were allowed to continue to collect the same payment, and we put it into a reserve. At that time, we were starting to worry about the sewer fund and the potential for needing to do sewer future stuff, so we just put it into the sewer reserve, okay? And now, since we're going to change the rates and restructure it and pay for it separately, we don't need to do that anymore. So we're just going to stop making that extra collection and change the rate so that it just covers the existing payment.
And that debt, is that a community vote, or is that...
No, it was a vote of the board back in 2007. One of the things the board is authorized to do is take on debt.
And does money from that debt service still go into reserves?
The money that we collect, that we will continue to collect, goes to pay off the loan, to pay off the bond. That money simply gets transferred through the district and sent out to the bondholder. And that'll continue for another. That'll continue for another 9 years, and then the entire thing in 9 years, that entire bond in 2027, that entire bond will be paid off, and that payment will go away completely. That particular payment will go away.
Thank you.
The decision, so long as the district was allowed to retire that debt earlier, and most bonds are structured that way, they could have made a decision to continue to accumulate that, you know, that surplus, and then pay it off a couple years early or a year early, but just due to the impact of the rates and the input that we were getting about that impact on people's utility bills, that was the reason. That's now the amount coming in. And the amount going out are as equal as it can be.
You mentioned, for example, the drying beds that apparently weren't built properly. You said not enough sun, not enough heat. And you're saying, you know, now we have a budgeted amount to build new ones. What's the reassurance that they're built properly this time if they weren't the first time? What's the difference?
Greg's kind of shaking his head in the back. This has been, we've found documentation going back quite a ways about problems with operating. It's a very simple process. The sludge goes in and the water decants out and it's supposed to dry out over time. But this is the new structure, the new concrete structure, and the way that's designed was designed by an engineer for that purpose based on our operation. But go ahead, Greg.
So the problem with first of all, the affecting one of the monitoring wells on the property. If we don't do something else, we're going to have to completely rebuild them. And that's going to be as expensive as it is. The fact of the matter is that they didn't work either. Because, as you can see by the covers, they never false back in. So I've got wind pushing in, those have no sides on them, so you try to dry them something in the wintertime, and it would keep the bed wet. In the summertime, it's providing shade or something.
So I'm just asking, so how do we prevent that from happening again with the new one?
So how do we prevent that now is we're not going to have any effect on the money. And we're going to run our press in the wintertime, and we're going to store the press wet throughout the winter. And the extra drying cap is not covered anymore on the summer. It's going to give us the real estate to try everything we store during the winter. And along with keep up what we need to press and what we need to operate in the summer. we benefit them, and it's not only operational, and it's a request, unless they're heavy. But now, instead of pressing the shipping stuff, the partial wet, and the prices might ship stuff that's not dried and very exposed, we're going to be able to ship it for at least cost, possibly.
We say some more time, and cut some of this new piece.
We're going to learn from our previous mistakes.
And more thought is going to go along the way on operational maintenance, so a man doesn't have to stand there and not be paid any dollars. He can keep doing what, right now, a person is spending 8 hours for his computer, and that operating, you know, so maintenance are a good contribution. So,
thank you.
Well, it's just drying beds. It's knocking down walls and pouring concrete where we have sand. And what we have in place right now is working great. We just put a couple more pieces in the process. You know, a conveyor that keeps that man, and we have to drive it and dump it in. And then we can then. So the replacements are not possible because of real estate. And redesigning the room.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kappa. So at this point, I will move on to item 2C in the agenda for those who are following along and open the public hearing. If you wouldn't mind, if you want to make comments, come up to the podium. We've got a microphone for you, that way everybody can be sure to hear what you say. We were expecting perhaps a few more people here, but we'll carry on with that. And if you can kind of hold your comments down to about 3 minutes or so, I'd appreciate that. So if anybody wants to kind of go, just step on up, move on over, and
probably could have asked this a second ago, but just two things. What are the mandatory repair costs now? I mean, if we just said, okay, this has to be repaired right now, what's the approximate cost on that? Do you know that figure right off the top of your head? And then the second one is, it was alluded to, wasn't really covered greatly, but in the event of a system failure, the state's going to impose some fines on us. What is the approximate minimum fine that could be expected, and how does that relate to the cost increase now? I mean, if you don't do anything and the system fails and you get a fine on top of that and replace whatever's failed, is that going to be 2, 3, 4 times what the rate increase is now? We'll just get some rough numbers or just rough idea. This will give people an idea of what could potentially be a bigger expense something doesn't get fixed now.
The first question is a little bit difficult just because I can't tell you which piece of equipment is going to break and what that minimum fix would be on that piece of equipment. And when I say equipment, I don't mean tractors, you know, those are part of it, but that's not the focus. When it comes to, you know, a lift station or anything else, if we do the minimum renovation necessary, we typically see a higher annual operating cost because you've got to spend more manpower time going out and checking it, cleaning it, making sure that it's right, because we can't afford the second part of your question, which is, I'm not exactly certain whether this is still the amount of anything that's gone way up there. $10,000 a day plus a certain amount in the thousands per gallon of sewage that spills. Typically fines will wind up being hundreds of thousands or below millions. And they didn't used to do it a decade ago. Now, because they have very, very active state won't pursue it, they'll take it to court, and then you'll have to pay that for fishing professional management. I don't bash any environmental groups or anything else, that's what they do. They protect that, and so they can sue in federal court under the Clean Water Act, and there's no defense for a spill. There's nothing. It doesn't matter if a contractor broke it, or somebody hit it with a car, or something, there's not a fire. You know, we're lucky on the situation of a flood where the system was inundated, and it basically cleaned our lines out. That someone didn't say something about, okay, where'd that spill go? I got a call today from somebody, that downstream water user, that was saying, do you guys have any sewer spills last year? You know, any, I know the ones that are documented, but was the so many millions of gallons that went through the sewer system during the flood, is that a, I don't know, somebody could nail us for that right now. We couldn't control it.
There isn't exactly a minimum fine. It depends on the circumstances. It can be quite high. If I remember, I was not on the board when the last big sewer spill happened. That was quite a while back, but I believe that ended up being negotiated down to $350,000 or something like that. Is that about right? Originally, it was higher.
$374,000.
One of the things that has also happened in terms of enforcement is the state, and this is, I'm just going to mention something, that the state has become very aggressive about trying to find revenue sources for the state. They now charge us by the hour or by the minute for talking to people on the phone at the water control board. They're looking for every possible. This really stems back from several years ago when it was so hard to get a budget passed at the state level, and so all the state agencies have looked heavily at finding new opportunities to generate revenue to keep themselves running. So right now, they've become considerably more testy about making, if something comes up, they want to collect as much as they can reasonably expect, you know, to justify. And to a certain extent, it depends on what we've done. So I mean, if we, this is something I happen to also be on the board of SDRMA, with this Special District Resource Risk Management Agency, which is, among other things, our insurance company. And it's an insurance agency it's a joint powers authority that insures special districts. And we see some pretty strange, some pretty expensive things come through, and a huge amount of the expense, both from state fines and possibly from lawsuits about damage, depends on does it look like the agency was trying to do a decent job of keeping things up. There's a thing called inverse condemnation, which is a legal term, but basically what it is, if we're running a public utility, if we don't keep it in good shape, and then damage occurs to people because of that, we can be sued. And in point of fact, if there's an inverse condemnation finding, that is to say, we didn't, we intentionally didn't keep things up in order to keep rates lower, for example, we would be sued and our insurance wouldn't cover it. So we would have to cover those damages. There's a huge case in the city of Palmdale. I can go on about this for some length, and I won't. But the potential exposure for inverse condemnation lawsuits is really large. It far outstrips anything the state is going to hit us with for fines. You know, we have to do the right thing. Basically, if we don't do the right thing, if we don't attempt to maintain things properly, we're exposing ourselves, which is to say, ratepayers, ultimately, to potentially really large damages. But, sorry, it's just
one point. Would it be safe, just because the numbers aren't accurate, would it be safe to say that if something were to happen, the cost of the repair as well as the cost of the fine would far exceed the rate increase?
good.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, over what period of time are you collecting the rate increase? It's, I mean, the increase that we're, the rate increase is designed to provide us with enough cash to be able to get enough grant money to support it, to get caught up, to bring things in line with, you know, so that we can, you know, show the state or the damaged party, for example, that we were making a good faith effort to ensure that major disasters won't happen, okay? And also to cover the regular repairs of things that happen. Things wear out. Sewer lines are very unpleasant places, and things corrode. Things, you know, get damaged and have to be replaced on a fairly routine basis. The last time that happened was mostly the lift stations in PML. That was the debt that we undertook, or that the former board undertook in 2007. And other equipment, but you know, a lot of that was because those lift stations hadn't been repaired for the first 30 years of existence of the district, and they were in pretty bad shape, as I understand it. I wasn't actually involved at the time, but that's what I gathered. So it's really, your question is really difficult to, I mean, the size of this increase is supposed to get us in a situation where going forward, we're able to do the things we need to do to make sure that there won't be any major disasters, and that routine maintenance that needs to happen will be paid for. That we'll be able to cover it as we go along. And so it's, hopefully it's the right size increase to make sure that not, you know, nothing will happen bad in the future. Sorry, I tend to ramble.
ATU, I'm pretty older and I've seen a lot of highs and lows. Where we're going, what you're proposing, how do we have the assurance that we're going to be on the right track, that this rate increase is going to fix a lot of the problems with the infrastructure? And then the other question, with the storm damage, do you get any, do you qualify for any reimbursement from FEMA?
CDA.
On your first statement, we're going to start. How are you assured that things are happening? You're going to be informed.
Okay.
Over and over, pictures, stories, information, the things, you know, when we talk about replacing a manhole or upgrading a manhole or replacing this equipment or doing that sludge drying slab, how did it work out? Is it functioning? You know, there'll be a graphical understanding of that that we'll have available on the web. It can do e-newsletters, those kind of things. That's definite. Okay, that's moving forward. The other thing is all of the board meetings and the board packet, whether you're there at the meeting or not, and ask questions, because it will be, it's not going to be hidden in the minutes. You're probably going to know what's going on by just reading the agenda, but look through the agenda and then go to that item. You don't have to read the whole thing. Go to those items that are of interest to you. Look at the finance reports that come out, and they'll show you how we're spending money according to budget and how we're doing on the project. So those are all really clear indicators.
Specifically, so to me that's
yeah.
So important.
You've
got to have that for emergency.
Okay, so the reserve is, that's an excellent point, because a reserve can disappear quickly. If you didn't plan carefully, or you get, or maybe you plan really well, but you get a board in there that says, BS, I am not going to do this, you know, and then all of a sudden, you're eating your reserves to operate. And then we're doing this over. So there's a method to adopt a specific restricted reserve. It has to be maintained on our financial statements as a restricted reserve. And then every September, when you close the fiscal year, you have targets, you have minimums, you have numbers of dollars that you're going to deposit into this account. The board will take action on a resolution that says we're moving $101,222 into this account and then you'll see that on the audit for that year in there. And then if there's a transfer out that's approved to fund the project that was related to that money, you'll see that happen too.
Is it a monthly transfer into the
account? No, in many cases it's an annual. Uh-huh. However, if we get in a cash flow situation where it's just a book entry in reality. It's not a take a check down to a bank and deposit it. It's really a fund issue, but I've typically seen it done on a quarterly, semi-annual, or annual basis, usually not monthly, just because if you make that transfer, when you get to the end of the year and you can't operate because you don't have the cash, you can't take from that restricted reserve that you've already deposited with you.
Is that a requirement now?
Once it goes in there, yeah, you can't take it. You've got to have full fiscal vote, and you have to have specific findings, and you have to, if you're taking it out for a purpose other than it was put in for, you have to have a loan resolution with a payback term. It's a lot of administrative work, but this board will be taking up resolutions for those reserves. It's going to take us a few months to do that. We're going to be a little bit cautious in the beginning just because we got to make sure that our financial projections work too. So if we do it immediately, we run a little bit of a risk because we don't have enough money in the bank if something goes on.
Well, that's what I mean. 18 years I've seen ups and downs, and you know, now the rate increase, and I get it, you're all trying to come up with a plan, and I'm buying into it, but how do we make sure we don't fall back?
So the key thing that you can look at is always going to be the financial reports, okay? And I encourage everybody to do that. This board is pretty much of one mind on how we want to proceed, and we're definitely not going to charge more than we absolutely have to, and we're going to keep an eye on it. We won't be here forever. And the thing about a restricted reserve, we're allowed to do that, but the way that the government code is set up, you've got to be clear on this, we can't bind future boards. So we can set up a restricted reserve, and the difference between that and an ordinary reserve is that it requires four votes to take money out of it for any purpose other than what it was put into. So if it's in there for capital improvement repair, it has to be used for that purpose. But a vote of four or five board members could still take money out. But it has to be done in an open meeting. It has to be done by resolution. And, I mean, honestly, you've got to keep an eye on us. I mean, and so the way you do that is, come to meetings occasionally, read the, look at the agendas and see what we're doing. If we, every budget, if you look at this year's budget, which we just approved at our last regular meeting, there are items, the major capital expense items are laid out. They're there. And so at each quarterly, typically the financials are rolled up quarterly. So every quarter you can go in and look and see, did that money actually get spent? Or did it not get spent? Or did it get spent someplace else? And that's how you can keep an eye on it. That really is the only, to a large extent, that's the only way the board has to keep an eye on it, is we look at what actually happens, money in, money out. And
there'll be a quarterly investment report as well. So, and that money will likely be invested in LAIF, which is a local agency investment fund. And so each September, when we make the transfer, we determine, okay, we got revenue over expenses, we met our targets, here we go, take that money, goes into that restricted reserve fund, we house it at LAIF, which typically gives us a better interest rate, not to cut the local banks out, but it's the right investment tool for this money. So you'll be able to look at that quarterly report too and say, oh, September, they transferred $100,000. The account went from $1 million to $1.1 million, and then there was an interest of $6,000 on it, So there's a number of ways. And also the board can ask for any kind of report that works for the indicators that we need.
And those will be posted on the website?
They'll definitely be in agenda packets, and we're always looking for ways to improve our website, to know where people want to go directly so they don't have to dig into a board packet or something to find it. But we'll be working on that. We've got a communication program, an outreach program that we're working on that and we'd love to have your input too.
So
where do you want to find it?
One of the things that Pete alluded to earlier is we budgeted money to both for sewer and actually also for the water system to have an engineering firm develop us a master plan for major repairs, major improvements that we need to make. And so once we have that, and I mean, personally, and this is not something the board has done, I'm just telling you my personal opinion, is once we have that in place, I'm going to be asking for some reports that indicate how we're doing against that. I want to, the point of having the master plan is great, then we have to actually execute it. And we're going to want to set up a method that gives good clarity as to showing.
Are you going to answer the
75%.
Question?
75%, except for that, the 2017 balloon damage that I have, the 409,000 or whatever it was, that's 100%.
Okay.
Sort of. It's right at about 100%, but the costs have increased and it's harder to get that thing. So, but the remainder of that work that was from the 2018 flood is 75%, so 25% comes out of our pocket. Even though
I have two questions. First of all, is this all predicated on the fact that you get the $6 million grant from the state? I mean, this budget will only work if you get that.
Yeah, that is built into the assumptions.
And what's the probability that you could get that grant if you did not increase the rates?
Zero.
Zero, because we would have to reduce the project size so that the loan amount...
Oh, no, but to get that grant, to get a grant, we could conceivably get a grant without it, but we couldn't get
because we have to take on 25% of it, so we have to show the cash flow to pay the principal and interest, plus we have to have the cash flow to be able to make sure we're going to maintain the infrastructure. So it's maybe half or a quarter or something.
So that was sort of the next question, is what rate increase do you need just to have enough to make sure you got the $6 million?
To get the $6 million?
This is
the amount we have to take on 1.5.
That's really what drives the need for the cash flow.
So the whole rate increase is going towards the pool of money that's necessary to get the grant. What are you saying?
No, I think I'm missing the question there.
So it's a certain amount of money that you're going to use to fund. 25% of the grant.
Right. Yeah.
So of the total rate increase, what percentage is that 25%?
I'd have to put the graphic, the dollar bill graphic back up.
Could you forego the rest of the rate increase and just put in place the portion that's necessary to get the $6 million?
Well, there's the additional problem that we're currently running in the red. Part of the rate increase is to rectify our operating expenses so that we're not losing money.
And so he
can probably tell you that amount. And then another chunk of it is to build reserves for the future so that we don't end up having to do this again so largely in another 10 years.
One of the big reasons that we're in this whole mess is that boards have been very proud of not raising rates. So by not raising rates, they've stuck us with this huge expense, and they have never put away for the infrastructure that's starting to crumble now. So what we want to do as a board, what we've talked about doing is And what we want to do with this is we want to put money away so we don't run into this problem again. Because the proper way to do it is to put away for the future and to be ready for when you have to replace the infrastructure again. And you have to start paying for that at the very beginning. So this should have been done from day one, but it never was. So that's why we're in the situation we're at.
So I'm going to try, I guess I can do the math in my head by doubling the amount, because when you look, because we're implementing the different expenses as they come online, and because we're ramping up the rate instead of putting it all in place at the beginning, I have to look at the end of the, 5 years of increases and where that money is going, okay? So I think that, just letting you know that that's what I'm looking at here. So for the grant match, which is the $1.35 million, loan 2.5% over 20 years, it's $3.82, so it's, I don't know, it's 7% of the increase. $3.82 of the $50. $50 at the end of that five-year period is the increase. Okay. Capital improvements, $17.24, so that $300,000 a year. And the ongoing improvements in equipment is $17.24,575 for infrastructure reserve, putting a little away each year for future replacement of the underground system. Operating expenses, $11.96, $12 for operating expenses, the salary, benefits, fuel, insurance.
That's a shortfall today.
The operating expense?
Yeah, roughly.
Basically, right now we're at zero. We don't have any money for projects, in other words, any replacements, and we don't have. We can operate, but we're not going to do any replacements, and we're never going to be able to increase our. And the expenses are never going to be able to increase. In other words, if the fuel goes up, we're going to have to buy less fuel. If the propane goes up or chemicals go up, we're going to have to buy less.
I think you said you're operating the grid.
Well, operating at zero is pretty close. I mean, I honestly think we're in the red, but
we have to do the projects. We can't do no projects. And so our operating line, if you take the projects out, we can come close to balancing, but then in order to replace a pump or a fixed asset of any kind, that term puts us into the red. So we're in the red. We can't say we're not.
No, you would if you had enough time to spend it on. So these $6 million that you're planning to get doesn't cover these other capital expenditures. So we've got $6 million to spend on infrastructure repair, basically, and then
yes.
Other capital improvements are just standard maintenance.
Things break. I mean, there's the infrastructure, the grant is being, will be covering a very specific set of capital replacement requirements. A lot of pipelines, a lot of things that are not something you do every day because there's accumulated years of age on these things, and to some extent, I mean, we still are in the process of evaluating exactly what that is. The planning grant that is being exercised now is being spent to find out exactly what it is that we're going to be requesting that to be done on. The grant money has to be very explicitly, it has to be very specifically designated how it's being spent. The state doesn't just say, here's $6 million, have a nice time. We have to tell them exactly how that money is going to be spent. And just even getting the estimates of how much that is costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars of grant money to figure out. So that's a specific set of things. But that isn't everything that runs in the district. I mean, if we could have a lift station go bluey on us tomorrow, and we don't know that. So we make some provision in the budget for doing things. Some of the stuff we do know. I mean, there's specific items that are just this is this year's project, this isn't part of the grant, we just got to fix this thing. And so there's several hundred thousand dollars for that every year. And we don't know what they are usually until they happen. They're repairs as opposed to planned rehabilitation, if I can try to make a slight different distinction there.
What's the possibility that you will not get $6 million?
Well, you have more experience at grants than we do.
There's nothing that, if we're held up for a long period of time before we have the planning grant completed, because right now we're being hung up by the state archaeologist can't get out there, they'll probably be 6 months late to get that survey done. And so we can't have a final construction application prepared until all of these environmental documents in place and everything else. So let's say we get out there a little bit too far, and then crops, because Prop 84 is gone, Prop 1 is gone, Prop 68 put some money into it, the recent proposition that was made. And there's another proposition on the November ballot. If the November ballot initiative goes, it's, I can tell you, 100%. If it passes, we will definitely have the money at 75% of doing it. If it doesn't, it's just going to be a much faster rush to finish off the Prop 68. We're going to have to get our own archaeologists that can get out there and not
use this all up.
So you ask what happens if we don't. So you ask what happens if we don't. We then basically we take that $300,000 would be then invested into pieces of rehabilitation, you know, between this manhole and parts of that project that we're planning to do as a $6 million chunk, we would pick away at it until the next grant came up. You know, that's where it would have to go, if that's our priority.
Anyone else? Yeah.
I'm a PML sewer customer, and I've got a few things here. It sounds like Don alluded to this a bit ago. It seems to me like we're playing catch up here or damage control for things that were not done correctly in the past, and that we're paying for past mistakes, planning, infrastructure, materials, financial misplanning, no rate increases when maybe there should have been. So that, for one thing, that's very uncomfortable to me that we're apparently going to pay the price, all of us, for things that weren't done correctly in the past. And if the state oversees GCSD, why were they allowed to happen? Why wasn't the state coming and say, hey, you guys better start, you know, doing a rate increase or checking your equipment, or, you know, how did this all happen to get to this point?
Well, this is perhaps a little off topic for the meeting, but briefly, the state doesn't oversee us. The state puts regulations on us that we must comply with. We are our predecessors are your elected representatives. We are an agency of the state. That's the way special districts work. And other than, and we're not allowed to go out of business or really to run a deficit for extended periods of time. And then that's it. That's the amount of oversight we get. As far as the political side of it, or if you want to think the administrative side of it. Now, as I don't know, I've been on the board for 5 years. We've actually did a water rate increase a couple of years ago, and we've been working on the sewer rate increase ever since, because you got to go through quite a lot of hoops to increase rates. As best as I understand it, and actually Jennifer is the only one who's been here long enough to answer this question, but back in 2008 when the economy collapsed, the then board decided, just to, as a general thing that they weren't going to raise rates because people were already having enough trouble. And then time passed, and that was that decision. Even though the economy started to recover, nobody ever revisited that decision. The state doesn't tell us what to do. The state tells us a lot of things about what to do, but they don't tell us how to manage our finances.
Okay. I misunderstood
that. Well, it's like when I got on the board, it'll be 8 years. That was the big thing. They were all proud that they weren't raising rates. And whenever they talked about raising rates, they didn't want to raise rates. And, when I first got on the board, we were fat with employees, equipment, all kinds of stuff. We were spending money, a lot of money, stuff like that, but we were not putting away, and we never had. And slowly but surely, we've all worked towards trying to get this going, but you're only one of five people that sit here, and you have to get the whole board, or the majority of the board to agree to start doing things like this. And some of this stuff is uncomfortable when you start talking about raising rates, especially when we're doing it now after years and years of neglect. It's very uncomfortable because it really hurts you guys in the pocketbook. I know that for a fact. It's got to. So it is uncomfortable. It's not fun, but it is our duty to do it, and it's our duty to inform our constituents what's going on. And that's one of the big things too in this district is educating the public so they understand what they have here. A lot of people that move here don't understand that there's very few customers to pay for the sewer, and that's a big reason it costs you so much money, and then the fact that we have 16 pump stations, so we're pumping it uphill all the time. So those, all this builds up. The systems are what, over 45 years old now? It was only built the last 45 years. And so it needs to be, we found that some stuff is looking pretty good still, but we still have to be ready to replace it, and we need to replace it, and we need to do that. And yeah, we're all going to have, everybody that has sewer is going to have to pay for it, but what's the other option? Is to chase your tail and just to try and fix it as it breaks and then pay the fines and everything else. And those fines can be big because that one sewer spill that happened right before I got on the board, it was going to cost us millions of dollars for a while. It was really bad, how bad it was. And then it ended up, we got out of it for like $300,000. We got to do some improvements to the plant and things like that. They let us do that. But that was because we got rid of a manager that wasn't talking right and somebody that could talk to them. That's the whole thing. You have to cooperate with these people. You can't thumb your nose at them. You have to cooperate. You have to do what they want you to do. So, it's tough, but we got to do it.
Okay, I understand all that. I see that you are putting together what seems to be a proactive plan that hopefully should work. I'm just wondering, and I guess you can't answer that, but my frustration is why wasn't that done previously so that we never had to get to this point? So I don't expect you to answer that. I'm not looking to blame anybody. That's a major frustration for me, and I imagine some others.
I'm telling you, in the short run, I do know that there was a decision. This was an up-and-up decision that they were going to hold rates steady.
Yeah.
So that decision was made in 2007 or 2008. Prior to that, I don't know. The trail because...
You asked a great question about who oversees you. We do have the regulators. It's like the highway patrol, that follow, that make sure you watch your speed. We have the regulators that make sure we meet our permit requirements, issue our permits. They're helpful to us for the most part. But it's people that oversee us.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. It's the customers and electing your representative. I know, I realize it sounds hokey, but if in those 6 or 8 years of meetings where the board was doing its budget, if the room was packed with people saying, get your act together, fix your equipment, what's the probability of a spill? How, what mean if all is going to be down and saying, you need to think about rate increases? Have you done a rate study? Does that rate study say you need to increase your rates? Nobody asks that question, because you always get the people that are on the other side saying, keep it down, you know? And then the 1,500 people that support the rate increase because they understand the need don't show up and don't say anything, you know? And
they don't understand everything that's going on either. So I'm asking about an official or a legal entity, a third party, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago that said, hey, you guys are on the path to a major issue if you don't start doing this, this, and this. There was nothing there to take care of to oversee that.
No, there is no such thing. Okay. There is no such oversight entity. Yeah. And I can tell you, every sewer district, every small sewer district, and every small water district in the state and really in the country, if you read, I mean, there's lots of articles about this. Everybody's in the same boat to differing degrees. I mean, some of them are actually in a lot worse shape than we are, but, you know, because of deferred maintenance and, you know, by keeping rates low. It's a nationwide problem, and we are one of the instances of it. Because there is no entity that goes around and says, hey, you know, you should be putting some money away on a reserve to make sure that you got some. That's us. We're that entity. The board is the entity. That's all there is.
And you folks elect us, or are supposed to elect us, but none of us were elected this time. Nobody ran against anybody here. And that's a shame, because that shows that the public is really not participating in their sewer system. And they're not. I mean, look at this. Look at this room, right? This is pathetic.
Yeah, this is pathetic.
You've got 1,500 customers, and this is all that shows up for this type of a hearing?
I'm embarrassed for us.
We are divergent.
That's the watchdog. It's you folks and us.
Okay, to be clear, I'm talking about previous politics, not anybody here.
But basically, there is nobody. It's us. There's nobody that tells us how to run our business.
I'm ashamed of it that we're in this position. It's sad that it's gotten this way, but it's the truth. It's the way it is.
Okay, maybe the background of increases in sewer pre-2010 were based on those master plans of that decade. And the need, and that's another document then that if the public understands the master plan and the need to spend $372,000 a year on these, that's the thing that will tell you that you're out of whack. If we can get the public to understand the master plan to spend this amount of money to do this, and all of a sudden it's not happening, you know, and it does, because the master plan will say you need this amount of revenue every year to do this, and it may require increases, and if the board's not increasing it, then they're not getting that work done. And so that's a really, really solid measure and can be really easily understood by people. Here's your list, things you gotta do, and you're not doing it. So hopefully we'll be able to produce some of that stuff, get the message out, even if it's just a soundbite, master plan, capital improvement plan, this amount of money per year, here it goes, you know, however we can do it. And then you will get some people engaged when they know the money's not going the right way.
Sorry about that. A lot of people are concerned, but maybe not enough. And something that might be, I think, more to the point, you seem to have basically what, a 5-year plan through 2022, more or less.
We are required by Proposition 218 or California Constitution 13, Section 13D. We can only, in terms of the rate increase, we can only talk about the next 5 years.
Okay.
We need to have, and when we have the master plan, it'll probably be a 20-year plan. Oh, because you got a plan for the future. But as far as what we can actually do for rate setting purposes, we're only allowed to consider the next 5 years.
Okay, so in the current 5-year plan, you have all the rate increases filled out specifically. Is there any situation, let's say, hypothetically in 2020, we realize, you realize, whatever, that these rate increases aren't getting us to where we need. Maybe there was more emergency work or more equipment broke down than ever expected. In other words, within this five-year plan right now, could you at some point in time say, you know, a few years down the road, say, this isn't cutting it, we're going to have to go beyond the rate levels that we set?
We would. We can always do that, but we'd have to go through the entire Proposition 218 process again. I mean, there's nothing that says we couldn't do this again next year, except we don't want to. Okay.
It's a long process.
If the grant money runs out, or there's some disaster in terms of the state's funding or something like that, and so we don't get what we're counting on, we would have to go back and relook at the whole thing again and try to figure out how we were going to cope with that. And then we'd probably have to come back and do another process.
So this isn't capped out or anything?
It can't go up without us going through the whole process again. Now, I will point out one thing that we can do. We don't have to have a Prop 218 process to reduce rates. So if the converse happens, if we get lucky and maybe we don't need, you know, we get more work done than we thought we were going to get done for the $6 million, and we don't, you know, and we find that we're building the reserve a little faster than we need to, we can reduce the rates just by a board action. We just can't raise them without going through a Prop 218 process. Huh? I've said that every time we have this meeting, I say the same thing. We are not, nobody on this board wants to charge y'all more than we actually need to have to, make sure that the system continues to operate.
There's people in Pine Mountain Lake and Groveland and Big Oak Flat that are on fixed incomes, and this has an impact on those families. And it's really tough to sit here and take in all this information and then consider raising the rates on people with fixed incomes. That's hard for each and every one of us, all five of us. But at the same token, if we don't do it, what happens? It's a real bad situation that we've signed up to work through and make this district efficient, build those reserves, and make it operational and a great place to work, you know, a great place to be. But right now, it's kind of tough.
Excuse me, does anybody else want to make a comment? You've been at the lectern for quite a while. That's just fine, but I want to make sure we don't leave anybody unable to speak. Okay, so if there is no other comment, I will then declare the public hearing closed. And we will move on to the final call for written protests and for the board secretary to tell us what the protest situation is. So if anybody wants to make a protest and has not turned it in, this would be the last time to do it.
There's a truck parked outside. There's a protest stacked in the head of it. Should I bring those in?
Ms. Flores.
To date, we have received 147 protests.
And that is, right now, that's the end of it. So we have 147 protests, which is well below 50% plus one. And therefore, a majority protest does not exist. So we will now move on to item 3, which is board action consideration of adoption of resolution 22-18, a resolution adopting proposed increased sewer rates to fund sewer services for the period of September 2018 through June of 2023. Strictly speaking, I'm supposed to read this resolution because we didn't waive reading the resolution. I'm going to shortcut that slightly and eliminate the whereases. It's in resolution form, so there's a lot of stuff it starts off with. Whereas the Groveland Community Services District has incurred increasing expenses for personnel, chemicals, materials, supplies, compliance with government regulations, and other costs of service related to providing safe, reliable drinking water. And whereas, I will now stop reading it, whereas is if anybody really wants to know, this is going to be a public record and you can read it. I will read the final portion of it, which is after the last whereas. Now, therefore, the board hereby finds and is hereby resolved as follows. One, a notice of proposed sewer rate increase and notice of public hearing was mailed to all district customers on July 2nd, 2018. Two, an informational public meeting regarding the proposed sewer rate increase was held on July 18th, 2018. Three, a public hearing was held this August 15th, 2018 to receive comments and protests on the proposed sewer rate increase, that is, this meeting. Four, written protests have not been submitted by a majority of properties affected by the rate increase, and the board may proceed with adoption of the proposed sewer rate increase. And five, the sewer rate increase as proposed in the notice of proposed sewer rate increase and attached hereto as Exhibit A is hereby approved and shall become effective September 1st, 2018. So that is the resolution content of Resolution 22-18.
Want to move?
I will entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the resolution 22-18, a resolution adopting proposed increased in sewer rates to fund sewer services for the period of September 2018 through June 2023.
I will second that motion.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 22-18, which is a resolution adopting proposed increased sewer rates to fund sewer services for the period of September 2018 to June 2023, and as with the terms we have just indicated, and basically the rate discussion, just to be clear, is contained in the document that was mailed to everybody. So that is what will be attached. To describe that, is there any discussion? Is there any other public comment? Yes, ma'am.
Just for clarification, Jennifer said there were 147 protests. Out of how many customers?
Approximately 1,600.
So it's, well, I mean, yes, yeah, so the exact number, it's nowhere near being 50%, so.
800 and something.
Okay, very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have unanimous 4-0 approval of Resolution 22-18, and I move we adjourn.
I'll second it.
It's moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We've never had anybody opposed to adjourn. So we are adjourned at 7:31. Thank you, those of you who came, for coming.